Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, August 26th, 2010. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. But this week, we head out to Salt Lake City, Utah, where this past weekend they held the second annual Beehive Brew-Off Homebrew Competition. It's been less than 2 years since they legalized homebrewing in Utah. We talk to the organizers of the competition, and we sit in on a bit of judging as well. If you're new to homebrewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And on Twitter, I am Basic Brewing, all one word. On Facebook, you can find me at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. And you can find our show page at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks to everybody clicking on the Amazon Associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of amazon.com, think of us and click on our Associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show, and we appreciate your support greatly. We also have Associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. And you can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on the iPhone Store, and we're on the BlackBerry podcast directory now, too. It's official. Andy Sparks and I have made plans and reservations to head out to the Great American Beer Festival this year. It's going on next month, starting, I believe, September 16th in Denver, Colorado. If you've waited this long, you may be out of luck to get tickets, but if you have your tickets in hand already, we may see you out there. We're hoping to hit some of the breweries around the area, too, so you may see us out in the wild, so to speak. Let's answer a couple of letters, shall we? Laura from Normal, Illinois writes, "A new brewer needs your help," is what the subject line said. Laura says, "My first brew was a wheat beer from a kit, and it turned out well. My second brew will be a cherry ale, a black cherry ale, from a recipe that I found in a book." By the way, congratulations on the wheat beer turned out well. It calls for ale yeast, this black cherry ale recipe does. But then Laura says, the recipe says, "Best when brewed at ale temperatures and then lagered for 2 months to mellow and blend the complex flavors." Laura says, "I thought that ales and lagers were two different beers that fermented at different temperatures. What is this recipe telling me to do? Brew like an ale and then put it in the refrigerator? Won't the ale yeast, go dormant? Or refrigerate after primary fermentation or something else? Please help. Any guidance would be appreciated." I think you're right, Laura. If you put that ale yeast into the fridge, those little yeast cells are going to get sleepy and fall to the bottom of the fermenter there and stop working. That may be a good way to clear your beer, but if you want them to condition the beer, if you want them to actually keep working on the beer, as is what happens in lagering with lager yeast, I don't think they'll be doing much work asleep on the bottom there. With lager yeast, of course, it's a different story. So if you want to put the fermenter in the fridge after primary fermentation is complete, you'll want to add half a pack of yeast in the bottling bucket when you bottle to make sure you'll have enough yeast and suspension to carbonate and condition your beer. Of course, if you're kegging, you don't have to worry about that. What I would do, however, is to, especially if this is your second batch, ferment as usual, bottle as usual, condition the beer in a room temperature place as usual, and then after the beer is carbonated in the bottle, put half of it in the fridge and put half in the closet or the cupboard or the cellar or whatever to see if there's any difference between storing it at a colder temperature for a long period of time. But that's just me, though. That's what I would do if I were to read this recipe. But what do you think? If you brewers out there have experience with this recipe, if this sounds familiar, or if you have experience with something similar, lagering an ale yeast or lagering a beer, has been brewed with ale yeast over a long period of time, keeping it cold over a long period of time. If you have some experience with that, you think it benefits the beer, drop me a line. Jeff from Stanford, Connecticut writes, "I currently use TSP, that's, I believe it's trisodium phosphate, to clean all of my equipment. It seems to clean well and rinse easily. The label says to keep away from skin and to use gloves. I've never worn gloves or protection and find myself arm deep in TSP solution throughout the brew day. It burns cuts and at times removes skin from my hands. But I've not seen any long-lasting effects. I guess that's a matter of opinion. Jeff says, how safe is TSP? Does it really rinse as easily as I think? I'm thinking about moving to one of the oxygen-based cleaners. Please let me know your thoughts. It removes skin and burns cuts, but, you know, no long-lasting effects. Well, Jeff, I think I'd invest in some gloves if I were you. You must have a bigger tolerance for, you know, skin chafage than I do. I don't personally have an experience with trisodium phosphate, so I went straight to the source, Wikipedia. According to Wikipedia, it says a 1% solution of TSP has a pH of 12, so it is very alkaline. According to Wikipedia, it's an excellent agent for cleaning everything from laundry to concrete driveways. But in the 60s, overuse led to environmental problems in the U.S. I can't imagine. Wikipedia also says TSP is generally not good for bathrooms because it can corrode metal and can damage grout. However, it does say that residues are fully water-soluble. So, let's see. Removing skin, burning cuts, corroding metal, damaging the environment. I don't know. Not something I'd want to use personally. But, you know, I could be wrong. If you have experience with it out there, again, send me a note. See what your thoughts are on trisodium phosphate in the brew house. But they use it as, what is it, flux or flax for sweating copper because it, you know, it'll clean the copper real well. I don't know. I that's just me, not in my brew house. Straighten me out, though, if I'm wrong. One more note. Sean writes in with this. While catching up on old episodes, I heard you call for brewing software suggestions and was not sure if you were aware of BrewTarget. It's an open source, i.e. free application for Windows and Mac that implements the Beer XML format, like Beersmith, for easy recipe sharing and import-export. I use it because I am too cheap to purchase software and is as fully featured as the Beersmith demo I tried. So, Sean, that's from Sean. BrewTarget is the software. He says he would recommend it for anyone that is too cheap, like me, to buy software. More info can be located here. BrewTarget.sourceforge.net. Thanks, Sean. I appreciate that. I haven't personally put BrewTarget through the paces, but I'm going to check it out. I'm mentioning it here in case there are others out there who are looking for something for the laptop by the BrewPot at the free price point. Now, just a bit of background for those who are fairly new to the podcast. This is a story we've been covering for, you know, what, 2-3 years now? A few years ago, Douglas Warzynski, a law student going to school in the state of Utah, was forced with a dilemma. And for those of you who are sticklers for definitions of words, dilemma is a difficult choice between two things. He loved homebrewing, but it was against the law in his state of Utah. If he were to take the bar exam, he'd have to attest that he wasn't involved in any illegal activity. So the choice was to quit homebrewing altogether, to be honest on the exam, or to launch an effort to legalize his favorite hobby in Utah so he wouldn't have to lie and he could continue homebrewing. Well, thanks to Douglas getting the ball rolling, after two tries in the Utah State Legislature, homebrewing was legalized in 2009, and last year the first legal homebrewing competition, the Beehive Brew-Off, was held. And by the way, Utah is known as the Beehive State, hence the competition title. I wanted to attend last year's competition, but I had some friends coming in from out of the country, so I didn't get to make it. But this year I made a point to attend and take part in the festivities. I had a lot of fun and judged a couple of rounds, shot an episode of Basic Brewing Video, which is out there now, and you can see that. And I also talked to some folks for the show, for this show, this podcast. Let's start out with an interview with Mark Alston, who is owner of the Bayou, where the competition was held, and also owner of the Beer Nut, the homebrew shop there in Salt Lake City. And we also convinced usually Mike Shy, Jamie Burnham, who is the manager of the Beer Nut, to join us in the conversation.
Well, Mark, this looks like a busy place.
Yeah, we had great turnout this year. A lot. We didn't know what to expect for the second annual because the first there was a lot of hype, but could have been more, could have been less. I didn't imagine we'd get this many more entries. It's great.
So what are the numbers? What was the number of entries last year, and where are you this year?
301 last year and 364 this year. So, I mean, that's more than 20% up. That's, we're pretty excited about that.
So what do you attribute that to? Do you attribute it to more visibility, or is there more homebrewing going on in the state, or where are the entries coming from?
They're almost all in-state. And you know what? I'm not sure. I mean, there's definitely a resurgence of brewing. Every time, the economy does a little stumble, people start remembering how much fun it is to brew beer at home. So that certainly doesn't hurt. And I think that a lot of people wanted to enter last year but were afraid to. And when they saw how many people entered and how well it went, they got a little more motivated this year and jumped on it.
So why would they be afraid?
People, it's funny, some brewers love to get their beers out and have other people taste them and review them and make notes on them. And a lot of people just want to play their cards really close to their chest and don't, or I'm not, probably for the same reason that I'm not going to put my adorable young boys into a talent competition or beauty pageant. Because as soon as someone says they're not adorable, then I'm going to have problems.
And the judges will be wrong, of course.
Of course. Of course they're wrong. Yeah, no, but it's funny. Last year at the awards afterwards where we sat down and talked to all the brewers, everybody who got their results back were super happy about it. I mean, just getting the description of it. And it was amazing how many times I heard people go, that had entered beers to try to figure out what was going on with their beers and were just super excited to have, professional brewers who make their living brewing help them out with their beer.
How many professional breweries were represented here today?
Almost all the Northern Utah brewers were here. We lost a couple this year because of the, there's a beer festival this weekend going on in Central Utah, so we lost a few people. But we had Uinta, Squatters, Wasatch, who am I leaving out? Hoppers.
We didn't get Red Rock, and we didn't get Bohemian.
So, it's a tough. This year was tough. Usually, the local brewers are great. They come, and I don't want to single anyone out that wasn't here because having the beer festival this weekend made it extra hard. The fact that we got any of them is great because they're unbelievable supporters.
And I have to say that we pretty much heard Jamie talk.
She did speak, didn't she? That was. She likes to be the brains behind the scene.
Ms. Burnham is the manager of the Beer Nut.
Yeah, she runs the show there. It pretty much runs everything there. Thank goodness.
So, would you answer a question?
I would.
Okay, since the legalization in Utah, have you seen an impact on the business?
I feel like I've seen more homebrewers come in wanting to get started. It could be because of the economy. It could be because the law changed. A lot of people said, I didn't know you could homebrew. And with all the publicity we got last year, it definitely raised people's interest. We also do a lot of winemaking, too. So around this time of year with harvest, we have everyone with their fruit trees and grapes wanting to make wine out of it. So it's increased for sure.
So what kinds of brewing do we see around here in Utah? What are the favorite beers, and what are the favorite methods?
Well, I was going to say, one of the things that's amazing when you certify yourself to be a beer judge, one of the things you have to really learn about when you're a commercial brewer is how important water is to brewing. And when you look at water analysis of Salt Lake City and Utah water, our water is really hard, much like Dublin, Ireland water. And it really shows itself in the competitions. We have some of the darker beers, the stouts, the porters, that come out of our competitions are just phenomenal. They come out great. And it's a lot harder for the brewers who are brewing the lighter lagers, the pilsners, because they have to really know what they're doing with their water. And it's harder on a homebrew side to be able to do that. So, and it's almost the same thing with the local commercial beers. I mean, some of the best beers and the most medal-winning beers that are brewed by our local commercial brewers are all the dark beers. So it really shows in the whole competition, Utah water.
Now, we talk about legalization. Since Utah has legalized home brewing, we've seen other states go that way as well. Oklahoma and Kentucky.
So I think Mississippi and Alabama are the last two to legalize home brewing.
And at the same time, I don't know if you have heard of what's going on in Oregon, but as I understand it, someone asked the state authorities, you know, if the homebrew competition that they always hold at the state fair was technically legal, and they said, well, no, it's not. So they pretty much shut down competitions in the state of Oregon. So that's the way I understand it. So even in a state where homebrewing is legal, you can't rest on your laurels. You know, you've got to pay attention to the law. And some, you know, I've had emails from people saying, you know, who cares if it's legal or not? I'm going to brew, or, you know, it doesn't matter if it's legal or not. Well, it does.
Yeah. And it really, I mean, to be able to run a competition, we have to be careful because we're running it out of a club in Salt Lake, and the club has a license. We have to be really careful. So we run everything by the DABC and made sure they knew that we're bringing this stuff in and it has to leave the building before we open for business. It's a process to make sure we stay completely legal.
So Jamie, is there a stigma in a state like Utah against homebrewing, or is that in general, but has the legalization affected that perception in people's minds at all, do you feel?
Well, I think that the people who are against homebrewing are against alcohol, period, and they're going to do whatever they can to keep us from doing it. We were blessed to be able to homebrew legally, finally, which we've been doing for years and years and years. We didn't care. And, you know, as last year, remember, Douglas was worried about being able to get a job, so with his hard work he got the bill up for review, and so I don't know. I think if there's a way for the man to keep us down, he'll certainly try, but we'll just keep going on. We've been going on. We don't care.
Yeah, I think you got to give credit to the legislators for going past that. And you know, Douglas's podcast, they posted some of the conversations between, say, Gary Glass and, you know, the homebrew advocates and the legislators, and it was, you know, revealing how much they didn't know about the process. And I think it was encouraging that they got beyond that and legalized it.
Yeah, I mean, when some of the concerns brought up were that people's homebrew was going to catch on fire, we had a lot of education to do at that point. And I was actually amazed that we were able to get them enough real information that they actually accepted it and passed the bill. I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, we're not creating meth labs here. We're we're boiling soup and putting yeast in it, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And but the misinformation, I mean, the previous time we tried to pass it, which was so many years ago, I can't remember, they were worried that it was going to bring about organized crime and bootleggers. And so that's the kind of mentality we were really fighting, and to try to overcome that was a challenge. Doug was a big help.
this seems like it's running extremely smoothly this year, and I don't know if it's you guys are just naturally organized or if you learned some lessons from last year.
You know, I think that we have a team between Jamie and the judge organizers and my wife, Killeen, who runs the stewards, and myself, that all of us have very complementary skills, which is why we get along so good in business in general. It's been really smooth, and it just makes it really easy to do this because no one steps on anybody's toes. No one has it, and we work really smooth, and it goes fast. It's a great with the team we have. And we have just the judges. I cannot give them big enough props. They come in and do an amazing job, take it really seriously, and make it so easy to deal with them. It's great.
Yeah, there are times it's a little noisier now, but there are times when you can hear a pin drop in here because people are just concentrating so hard on the work at hand.
Yeah.
And I repeat over and over again, it sounds like it's a fun job to come and you know, taste a bunch of beers and take some notes about it. But it's if you do it right, it's difficult.
Yeah, it's work. It's physically and mentally exhausting to be concentrating that hard on, you know, 12 different IPAs or whatever. It's taxing. And at the end, you're just like, you're done. You need a break from everything for a minute.
Well, I want to thank you for hosting this. And, you know, thanks for your hospitality. And it's wonderful. I'm glad I was able to come over and witness it and take part.
We have many years to go. Don't stay away. We'll be doing this forever.
Awesome. Well, and I encourage homebrewers out there to send your entries in because they're good judges here.
All those Oregon homebrewers will welcome you to move to the state of Utah. We got gorgeous mountains, and you can homebrew and enter competitions here.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Jamie.
Thank you.
Well, I've talked to Jamie on the phone for years, and it was great to talk to her in person and great to meet Mark, too. They did a great job of running the competition, and it went extremely smoothly. And you wouldn't have guessed it was only the second one. And if you go to the Beer Nut website, you can see the results of the competition. Now to get an idea of what it's like to judge a competition, if you've never done so, just to give you an impression of what goes on, I asked a table of judges, including homebrew advocate Douglas Wierzynski, to let me in on the proceedings for just a few minutes.
Yeah, and on top of the ring, there's more stuff.
That depicts a little bit maybe of an infection.
Can I get you guys to introduce yourselves?
Yes, my name's Andy Shaw.
Eric Wheeler.
Doug Wierzynski.
I'm going to stand here and watch you guys work. I'm going to listen in on your conversations to give people kind of an idea of what goes into this judging procedure here. You've got your beer.
First thing we're doing is visual inspection and aroma.
And you guys were noticing something happening in the bottle.
The bottle itself, yeah, it has a neck ring where the fill level was, indicating there could have been some sort of infection or other problem. And a lot of sediment hanging on the side of the bottle. It's just indications of things that are not clean.
Now, this is, you're judging Saisons, right?
This is actually a Belgian pale ale.
So since it's a Belgian, does that, you know...
No excuses for infection.
I say that because I know that there are some people out there who think that, you know, if your beer is infected, it's a Belgian. So...
I mean, even so, I mean, you compare it to the style guidelines. I mean, we're looking at something that's less than very clear, which is what we're supposed to be seeing, so... It all contributes to evidence that we might have something that shouldn't be there.
So what are we looking for? I mean, what are you looking for that that this beer should be?
Well, let's see. We are looking for exactly what the style guidelines say should be there. So in appearance, it's got to be a copper color. We're looking for a very good clarity, a creamy, rocky white head. I mean, we've got a nice white head here. You know, we can give it the benefit of the doubt on rockiness, but the clarity is it's not the worst we've seen so far today, but not the best. So
it's lacking. Yeah,
still a pretty beer, and way carbonated. Got lots of bubbles.
Yep, big head.
It's my nickname in high school.
Starting to make almost an eraser, as we joke about eraser head.
I think the Eraserhead guy, I think that character's last name was Spencer, by the way. There, just so that, just so long as there's no placenta in the beer, I think that's okay.
No.
To imagine these comments will end up on the editing floor.
Oh, I don't know. Depends on what my mood is next week. So now goes the aroma, the sniff test.
Yep.
What are you getting?
I'm getting a fruity, almost like a gooseberry or some blueberry kind of.
Definitely getting a little bit of that fruity, citrusy wonderfulness that comes with a great aroma in a Belgian.
I'm jealous.
Hey, pour yourself one.
I just might. Of course, you guys use most of that. Well, okay. Just a little dab, because you guys might need it for official purposes afterwards.
Mm. It's definitely, when you look at the bubbles, it's going to town, carbonated.
Yeah, I don't want to say anything because I don't want to influence you. But it's a really tasty beer. So is it harder to judge a good beer or a bad beer?
Good beer.
a bad beer will have obvious flaws. You know, it could taste like creamed corn or grassy. You know, those types of things are easy to pick out. When you're picking between two good beers, you're splitting hairs at that point.
Andy made a good observation this morning. We were doing an earlier flight together, and that maybe 10 years ago, homebrewers had access to inferior ingredients. There was less information out there, and so now I think what we're seeing and what Eric and I are bringing, being brought into, is that these beers are much closer together. The pack is very tight. We are, in a sense, splitting hairs. We're trying to find what matches the style, the golden rule, you know, as it were, and they're all very close. So. You know, we were critical in some instances, but that doesn't mean that the beer wasn't good to begin with.
I found that I actually drank more of the beers that I thought weren't perfect or didn't have flaws, because I needed to have more data to think about. You know, why wasn't this exactly the style? Whereas if a beer was wonderful, you could pretty much just write the style guideline down, and that would be the judgment of the beer. But if something was a little off, I found that I needed more to drink to pick out what was not right. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense, and maybe it makes you an astute judge. I had the opposite problem. We found that the good beers were disappearing a lot faster, so maybe it's all in your judging style. Right?
But at least now we know where to send our bad beers.
Thanks a lot. So now you're down to the tasting.
Yep, just getting to all the different flavors that we're getting, the sweet and the hops, looking for your balance, fermentation characteristics, aftertaste. It takes two or three times to get it all figured out.
I guess you try to reserve some of the better ones so that at the end of the tasting you can go back to them. But do you find that at the end of judging a round, because of the timing and because of all the beers that you've had, that your perceptions of those early beers that you liked changed over that round? Does that make sense?
I actually had that problem this morning, because I started with American stouts and then moved into Russian Imperials. And we had set apart a couple of American stouts that we wanted to have considered, because we were actually, the group stouts was divided between two tables. And going back through the flight, you know, maybe the four or five that we had reserved for a second round of judging, it changes your perspective. And I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. Certainly it requires you to pay more attention to what you're doing, because it becomes less of a a gut instinct, and you have to sort of focus your attention a little tighter to what the style guidelines are. So,
you know, you do your best with trying to drink some water and eat some bread in between beers, but the bottom line is, you know, your tongue is going through a lot, and you know, these beers aren't so bad, but you know, anything with high IBUs, you know, part of the competition is luck, where you end up in the flight. And you know, some brewers will err on the side of caution, make their beers, you know, slightly more hoppy if they're in an IPA, for example, to make sure that, you know, that comes through no matter where they are in a flight.
We noticed today that I was at the table that was judging robust porters, and there was another table that was judging brown porters, and we had to kind of reconcile those two to come up with the first, second, and third of the porters. And we had to get fresh bottles to start kind of all over again with all those beers to make that decision, because, number one, they were so close together, but number two, we wanted to make sure that each beer had an equal footing. So, you know, it was important to us, I guess, to get beers that were a little more chilled, a little more fresh on the table, to get the carbonation levels back up and all that. And it was revealing to me that some of the perceptions that we had initially, we had to take another look at. So this is all very subjective, obviously. And it's a tricky, tricky thing. It's hard. You think you'd be drinking all these beers, it'd be fun, but it's hard.
It can actually kind of be a little wearing on you. You know, it sounds like a lot of fun to come out here at 9 o'clock in the morning and start drinking beer right away. And to be sure it is. It's great to get together with everyone here and have a great homebrew comp for a second year in a row. But specifically speaking, you know, the beers, it does matter in the order that they're served or the temperature at which they're served. We did the same thing when we were – stouts obviously are a large category, and so – when the two tables came together and started discussing sort of a mini best in show, we got all fresh bottles, made sure they're all cold, and came to it with a fresh perspective. And I think a great example was during the, you know, the break in between the two flights. Commercial examples are not immune to this. We all shared a commercial example of a great beer, and I got talking as I usually do, and went back and sipped that after several minutes, and thought, "Ooh, you know, it wasn't the same beer I had when it was cold, and ought to have been served cold, frankly." So, you know, homebrew beers aren't exclusively subjective to the temperature variance. I think it's important to get it served at the right temp.
Well, that you know, you should never let Miller High Life get warm. I think
it's true.
So now you've got you've judged on aroma, appearance, flavor, mouthfeel, and overall appearance, or overall impression, made notes, despite my jabbering at you, and you've come up with a score, some numbers, and now you guys, since you've been given sort of a mandate to come together on a spread of 7 points or less, right? So you guys kind of have to come to some negotiations and some consensus.
Well, Andy's wearing a beer police shirt, so I'm pretty sure whatever he has to say goes.
And I think he could take you, frankly. Yeah. So,
well, size can be misleading, but
seeing that's where it's at.
So it'll be interesting to see where you guys come on this one. That's a tasty beverage. And later in the flight, it does get more difficult to add, I discovered, after doing the robust porters.
He's already there. Same score.
So we have a high five at the table?
Andy and I are agreeing on this one. Last beer, we were far apart, and this one we're dead on. So we're going to give this particular beer a 39. But as a group, Doug says 35.
Majority rules.
Majority rules. We're going to go with 39,
What I would do is I would go to as low as 38 to still keep it in the excellent.
Yeah, okay.
But I won't go below that.
Which I still think it is. I mean, I was too busy jabber yawn over here to give this one a fair
shake. We'll take that one to account then.
Okay.
That was a very good beer. That was really good. I mean, so just to kind of close this part out. The what we're looking at, the numbers from 45 to 50 would be outstanding, and I would assume it's fairly rare to get that high. Excellent, 38 to 44. Very good, 30 to 37. Good, 21 to 29. Fair, 14 to 20. And problematic, 0 to 13.
And what we're looking at is the beer score sheet off of beertown.org. So if anyone wants to take a look exactly at what the beer judges are looking at, it's on that website.
Or BJCP.org as well, the Brewers Beer Judge Certification Program. Either one of those websites would work. What's that?
Andy's writing in there.
The uninitiated may still use conventional computers, but us in the next generation use our handy BJCP style guidelines available for download on the iTunes App Store.
Just a little Apple ad there. Well, thanks, guys, for sharing that, and I'll get out of your way.
Thank you.
I'll be the same.
What a lot of fun, and a lot of work, too, mind you, but a lot of fun. And after the event, Douglas and Eric and I headed out to a pub afterwards to sample some commercial brews and eat some good grub. And you can see pictures of the goings-on at our Facebook page, facebook.com/basicbrewing. You can see pictures of the judging and pictures of Douglas and Eric and I out there on the sitting at the bar, kicking back a little bit. I want to thank everybody again out there in Salt Lake City, including Doug's wife, Sarah, and Eric's wife, Teresa, for being our designated drivers, which is very important. And it's also handy to stay at a hotel within walking distance of the venue. So, good advice. Thanks, everybody, and I hope to make it out there again to Salt Lake City again. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can check out our homebrewing DVDs, Introduction to Extract Home Brewing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. And you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too, including our Reinheitsgebot is a four-letter word shirts. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured product this week that were purchased through the link are Maximum Muscle Trainer Wall-Mounted Pull-Up Chin-Up Bar. Around this house, I think it would be known as the coat hanger. And but I'm sure you will get... I hope you will get use out of it. I don't know if I could do a pull-up. Austin, I know that's a shock. Austin Powers Collection was also purchased. The Austin Powers Collection Shagadelic Edition, loaded with extra mojo. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We appreciate your support. And don't forget that you can also join the American Homebrewers Association through the associate link on basicbrewing.com, as well as subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine. But that's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. Talk to you next time, everybody. So long.